The Monocle Quality of Life Conference returns, and this time we're touching down in Zurich. Join Monocle's editors and a lineup of tack-sharp panellists for lively debate, informed conversation, and top-notch hospitality from the 28th to the 30th of June. Find out more and book your ticket now at conference.monocle.com.
This is Monocle on Design, Monocle 24's dedicated weekly design show, and I'm your host, Josh Fennett, on today's show. We're in it for the long haul and speak to an industrial designer responsible for making the weariest flight that little bit more comfortable.
Making sure that there's enough storage for, you know, books and magazines and people's devices, or even, you know, creating a little shelf on the back of the economy seat.
And of course, our team is on the ground in Salone del Mobile for the start of Milan Design Week. We'll bring you our first impressions. And we also talk with the head of Japanese giant Panasonic's new in-house design team, Flux. All that coming up in the next half hour right here on Monocle 24 on Monocle on Design with me, Josh Fennett. Now, last month saw the first non-stop flight between Perth and London, operated by Qantas. Billed as a game-changer for aviation, it also raises questions for designers, from getting the thing off the ground and back down safely to the customer experience in the cabin on this otherwise grueling 17-hour flight. This task fell to David Kayon, a Sydney-based industrial and interior designer, who was himself on the inaugural flight. Kayon joined Monocle's design editor, Nolan Giles, here in London, to talk ergonomic seating, crockery, and why an Australian barbecue is always a good idea, no matter what the altitude.
It was the first time that this flight had been done, something of this length, and the first time that the two continents were connected, so directly with no stop. So it's hectic. You don't get on and relax. You get on and you do a little bit of press and some interviews, and you answer a lot of questions about what your involvement with the aircraft has been. And, you know, it's a celebratory flight. So it's like flying in Italy where everybody's clapping every 5 minutes. It's a lot of fun.
A big part of what you were responsible for design-wise was the seating. When you're thinking about this long flight, this 18-hour flight, what are your considerations as a designer and how does it differ from a conventional shorter flight?
Well, my primary consideration has to be the passenger, right? So it has to be their comfort and doing whatever we can to improve their comfort, their ability to sleep, their ability to relax, and everything that you might need to do to keep yourself busy on a flight that's that long. So whether that's sort of making sure that there's enough storage for, you know, books and magazines and people's devices, or even, you know, creating a little shelf on the back of the economy seat so that someone can put their own device and have all of those options for entertainment. It is a long time to be up there, so you've got to allow for all of that. And just as important is the ergonomics and making sure that the cushioning and the fabrics and everything is as comfortable as it can be. You know, aircraft componentry has to be bulletproof. It has a very hard life and it's constantly in service. You know, you kind of forget, you fly an aircraft in, everybody gets off. That aircraft then gets cleaned and turns around and goes straight back. It almost doesn't stop. So that sort of means that you have to create something that is durable and comfortable. And that's often a hard balance to find, but I think that we do find it.
One of the things I've heard as well in terms of working on a brief like this is that you're quite restricted in terms of, you know, measurements, in terms of what you can actually do to the seat. How do you kind of overcome those obstacles and what kind of challenges were you faced with regard to that?
It's like a negotiation. So it's really about sort of navigating a pathway through those obstacles that are there, and they're often there for really good reasons of safety and certification and, you know, keeping people alive in the event of something going wrong. One of the decisions that we're not really involved in is how many seats are on the aircraft. That's something that basically is part of the business case that the airline has to make. So they say, well, we need a certain amount of seats in business, this certain amount of seats in premium and economy and so forth. And then you need a certain number of galleys and lavatories to sort of facilitate everything that goes on in the aircraft. So we're then working within, okay, we know that we have seats that are pitched at sort of 40 whatever inches that they are, or depending on which class you're in. And we don't, unfortunately, get to make that decision, because if we did, we'd be like giving as much space as we could back to the passenger. So it's how do you make that particular space envelope as comfortable as possible? And it means that you sort of trying to engineer interesting solutions of how people's feet go under the seat in front of them or how they recline. Like, for example, our premium economy seat, it doesn't pivot on a point. It, I guess, rotates around a point, so the seat goes forward and back at the same time, and it means that it doesn't come into the face of the person that's sitting behind by, I guess, half as much as it would normally, which is, I think, a really important feature. It's about finding those little solutions within those constraints so that you can maximize what the passenger has at their use for that, you know, period of time, which is, you know, getting longer and longer.
So if you were to kind of distill down the most important elements to think about when you're designing for these long-haul flights, what are the key issues that you're addressing? Is it lighting? Is it the fabrics on the seat? What were the real things that, if you had to pick three, you would say this is the most important by far?
Well, number one, it's ergonomics and comfort. That's the one thing that I think if you jeopardize that or if you compromise that, that's what a passenger will really remember. This thing doesn't work in an intelligent fashion. It works in a silly way, or it does something that's annoying. That's the kind of thing that a passenger will take with them. And comfort, I guess the fabrics come down to that as well. It's about, you know, not trying to create a weave because you want a certain aesthetic. It's trying to create a weave that's super comfortable and then fulfills all the performance, you know, criteria that it has to. Lighting is also really important. You know, the aircraft, this particular aircraft, the Dreamliner, it has fully customizable lighting. So part of our process was going to Seattle and going into a mock-up that they have there and designing different scenarios that, you know, help people go to sleep or create a really nice ambiance or mood during dining. And that was a very interesting process, actually, because they ask you, you know, what do you want to do? And as soon as somebody asks you, what do you want to do with the lighting? It's a really big question. And you have to go away and do a lot of research, and it's a holistic question, you know, what are we doing with the food and what are we doing, you know, during these different phases of flight? And so, you know, we decided, okay, during dining, for example, we want to create like a really quite a moody cabin, and we have a different light scenario for lunch and a different light scenario for dinner, so that people, after they go through that dinner service or go through that breakfast service, they're transitioning into either sleep or getting ready to get off the aircraft.
And Qantas itself, it's a brand in a way that is synonymous with design and good design, whether it's its logo, whether it's its old advertising campaigns, whether it's more recent work that it's done with Mark Newson. It seems to be a brand that values design. What was that experience like working with Qantas? Because I know you do quite a lot with them. How do you feel about their kind of perception of design and where you can overlap with it and work with them?
They're very conscious that design is really, really important. And I'm not sure how many other airlines are as conscious as Qantas are, and they put a tremendous value on it. You know, the simple fact that I'm here on this trip, being part of this inaugural flight, means that they, I guess, value what I've been doing with them recently. So it's an interesting experience because we do get given a lot of freedom, which is terrific. It's tremendous. I think they have a lot of faith and a lot of trust in what we're suggesting. Now, everything goes through that, you know, test of practicality. There are a lot of sort of hurdles that have to be overcome. It's not just blanket, you know, throw design at it. Design is used as a problem solving tool rather than simply for making something the right color or, you know, attractive. So I think they understand that it's a really holistic process to the aircraft, and it's part of the entire journey. And so, you know, we've done the aircraft, but we've also done the lounge that you board this aircraft on, you know, or that you get off this aircraft when you're coming back in after a very, very long voyage. And I think that they've understood that we have to be part of that whole process to create something that's firstly unique, but then also is, you know, completely connected.
So you have also designed the new lounge at Perth. Could you take us through that, please?
It's been designed with two major purposes. One is preparing you for a 17-hour flight, and one is helping you recover from a 17-hour flight before you do the next thing. So we have a tremendous number of showers to facilitate basically everybody having the opportunity to have a quick shower. The other thing that is quite interesting about the lounge, and I think unique, is that there's an outdoor area with a barbecue. And, you know, it's not a barbecue that you use yourself. There's chefs there that sort of prepare food that is, I guess, symbolic of Western Australia and the region. And then there's a wellness space as well. Now, that wellness space can help you stretch and recover pre or post flight. So it's running like 15-minute stretching and sort of similar to like a yoga-like class that people can go and join. And it's been specifically designed so you don't have to necessarily be, you know, in Lycra or something like that. So there are all these key elements, and combined with the type of food and beverage that's on offer, that sort of helps the body either transition to the local time or helps the body get ready to sort of spend 17 hours in an aircraft.
That was Aussie industrial and interior designer David Kayon speaking to Monocle's very own Aussie and design editor to boot, Nolan Giles. Don't miss the print interview with the designer in Monocle's June issue, which is transport themed, and on all good newsstands from next month. Now, speaking of flights, a Monocle delegation decamped to Milan this week for a much anticipated time in the design calendar. This is the first day of the International Furniture Fair Salone del Mobile, the largest of its kind, where over 300,000 visitors are expected, both industry insiders and the public alike. If you're in Milan, you may have caught a glimpse of our new print project, Monocle's very own Salone-themed weekly newspaper, where we've picked out what we think are some of the most important events and designers to keep an eye on at this year's fair. And of course, our picks on where you can enjoy a good Negroni or two as well. Let's head to Milan, where earlier today, this show's producer, Daphne Karnesis, caught up with Monocle's design editor, Nolan Giles, to mull over their plans for the week and leaf through our handsome new Salone newspaper.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good.
So we got some wine here. Well, you've only got a Coke, which isn't a very good way to start the week, but
I've just got off a flight, Nolan. Give me time to warm up.
Cheers.
So tell me where we are now. I mean, it's my second time in Milan, but it's my first time at the Salone del Mobile. Tell me about this neighborhood.
Yeah, so we're in Brera Design District, where a lot of the action is going to be taking place this week in a few of the furniture company's showrooms and special events in different buildings. I'm about to head to Vitra's event, the Swiss furniture giant. I believe that's in a theater, but I have no idea what else is going to happen, so I'll find out in about 15 minutes after we do this interview.
What interviews have you done since you've been here?
This morning I went and visited COS, the fashion company's design installation. They do a yearly event here and it's always quite busy, quite popular. This year they've worked with an artist and an industrial designer called Philip K. Smith III. His specialty is working with mirrors in kind of like far away landscapes. So he's done work in deserts, he's done work on the ocean. It's very kind of calm and quiet approach that he takes. This time he's done it inside a beautiful old 16th century villa. It's kind of this semi-circular mirror-based piece which brings the sky and brings the architecture of the villa into the setting, really, so you can actually sit on the steps, look at the mirrors and see the sky pass you overhead. So it's quite a beautiful experience.
And I've also got the Salone Weekly here with me, which I believe over the past month you were very busy preparing. Should we have a little leaf through it? I thought on the very first page, the interview with Milan's deputy mayor was really, really interesting, I thought, and how she talks about the combination of obviously the trade show element at the Salone del Mobile, at the Roferia, then also the Fiori Salone, which is kind of where we are now, which is the independent events scattered around the city.
Yeah, I think that's what Milan does very well in terms of hosting this event. Obviously you have this gigantic trade fair, which isn't for everyone. Not everyone wants to spend 2 days going around and seeing every piece of new furniture made this year. Obviously we want to see that because we're interested to know. But for the casual visitor to Milan who wants to take in the city, take in the culture and take in Design Week, there's just a myriad of events spread out across the city for the general public to enjoy. So for the most part, things are free. For the most part, you can wander into these events, you can experience design, you can meet the designers, you can talk to the brands. So really, it gives you absolutely everything you need, you know, in this spot. And Milan is doing this very well. Fingers crossed there won't be any transport strikes like last year. But for the most part, I think we've got the good weather and we've got a good event ahead of us. Let's get to the design pages. So I think one of the things that I am particularly proud of with this piece is how we've unpacked the culture of design in Milan, as well as what's going on at the fair, the kind of events that you want to see and the designers you want to meet. So we've delved into some of the studios, a very nice firm called Studio Pepe, the beautiful interior work that they're famous for. We've spoken to the designer behind Bosco Verticale, which is now one of Milan's most famous buildings, which is that incredible green tower where the greenery is kind of draped over all of these balconies.
Yeah, I've seen that one. I think it's quite close to where I'm staying in Isola, northern Milan, isn't it?
Which is a very nice neighbourhood. We're staying quite close to you as well. And Isola itself, I think every year they're doing something different for Milan Design Week. So it's definitely worth having a wander around that neighbourhood too to see what they're doing. And that's one other nice thing I should say as well, is the fact that because Milan is kind of divided into these districts, there's almost a little bit of a competition between districts to see who can do the best events. So Isola is doing an event, Cinque Vie, I hope I said that right. That's a nice little neighbourhood in the city and there's lots going on there. So they're all kind of competing with each other in a way for who has the best design district.
The Salone Weekly will be available around Milan for the whole week, I believe. Nolan, tell me about an interview that you did earlier today, 3M, formerly known as Minnesota Mining and Manufacturing. For me, it's quite an exciting one. I know that they invented the Post-its and Scotch tape and all these amazing kind of design innovations, but I don't really know much about what they're doing now.
Yeah, so they are based in Minneapolis, and I was assured by them that it's a very cool city, a very creative city. They actually employ 25,000 people there, so they're a big employer in the city, but they're really pushing in the world of innovation and creativity. So their phrase is that you're always within 3 meters of a 3M product, because some of their innovations and novelties are in our phones. They're in the glue that attaches surfaces to the walls. They're used in cars. So a lot is going on there, actually, in terms of what they're doing on a creative level. And I guess what they were highlighting today was the work that they do with architectural surfaces. So they do, like, I think it was about 400 or 500 different new surfaces they're launching this year, which, using the stickiness that they're famous for, you can apply them to different elements of a bar or a restaurant. You can pull them down very easily and have a new look the next day. So they're really intercepting with designers and architects on a level that I wasn't aware of until I spoke to them today.
What else have you got planned for the rest of the day and the week, in fact?
I'm really looking forward to going to Villa Borsani, which is actually outside of Milan. And it was owned, and I believe it's still in the family, of a gentleman that had a company called Techno, and they did incredible office furniture from the mid-century to the kind of 70s and 80s that were very well respected in the design industry. And it's just an open house, basically, where you can wander around, see this incredible mid-century villa, view the archive of the furniture, the Borsani furniture, and just relax outside of Milan for a while. But back in Milan, Daphne, I'm really interested to know what your plans are for the next couple of days.
So later today, I'm going to be visiting a studio that's right around the corner, actually, De More Studio. What's interesting about them is that they've kind of not exactly gone against, but they haven't gone with the whole minimalist sort of aesthetic when it comes to interior design. They're quite opulent and they've sort of stuck to that aesthetic. They've worked on residential projects and also retail spaces. You know, they've designed the interiors of shops for Fendi, Aesop, Mez, and they also have, I've noticed over the years, kind of got a knack for showcasing their designs in quite beautifully thought out compositions. So I'm quite excited to see what they've done with their studio this year, and I'm quite interested to see what's happening at the Satellite section. Salone Satellite was, of course, as you know, is for emerging designers specifically. And this year the theme is emerging makers, so Latin American and African designers. I'll also speak to the head curator and founder of that section to hear what she has to say and speak to a few of these emerging designers as well.
So you've got a taste for the more flamboyant design, which we do see a lot of in Italy. I mean, I was in Stockholm recently for their design week, and it's very much Nordic minimalism and beautiful mid-century inspired pieces. But I think that's one of the good things about Milan. You do see a little bit of flair, a little bit of eccentricity, a bit of luxury in the products and in the design here. I think one of the great things that you'll experience here is the fact that basically everybody who's anybody in the design industry is actually in the city right now. And you can wander from stand to stand at the Fiera and meet these incredible designers who are
getting a bit starstruck. Nolan, do you think you're going to spot anyone famous?
Well, we've got Kengo Kuma on the lineup for the interview, so I'm very inspired by. I think he's a brilliant architect. Chiara is right now interviewing Daniel Libeskind, an incredible architect as well.
Big names.
Yeah, so many big names, too many to count. So very excited to meet a few designers, and I think they're all in the element here. They're all very excited to talk about what they're doing, and you always end up with too much content. So if you're listening to Monocle 24 this week, you're going to have a feast of design interviews with top names.
And where can people get their hands on the Salone weekly newspaper, Nolan?
Well, it's absolutely everywhere in Milan, including the airport lounges and the top hotels, but also on newsstands. As much as I'm excited to see the design fair and the events, I'm super excited to see this beautiful piece of print sitting on these amazing newsstands that you see all over the city. So hopefully we'll be wandering around the fair tomorrow and the next day, and we'll see lots of interested and interesting people holding our newspaper.
Thanks to Nolan and Daphne there in Milan. Monocle Salone weekly newspaper is on all good newsstands throughout the week. Do nab yourself a copy. Now, installations are a common feature of Fuori Salone, the name given to the fringe events taking place outside the fairgrounds and throughout Milan Design Week. They're a way for brands, large and small, to experiment and reach out beyond their core consumers, plus turn a few heads in the process. Now, as part of the company's centenary, Japanese technology giant Panasonic this year occupies the courtyard of the imposing Pinacoteca de Brera Art Gallery with its Transitions installation, a large dome-like structure in the shape of a giant water drop showcasing the company's air purification technology. What a breeze! Its designer, Takahiro Ikeda, is the new creative director of Panasonic Design and heads a geographically dispersed team known as Flux. This show's ever-busy producer, Daphne Karnizis, is in Milan as we speak, and this week met up with the designer at Panasonic's installation.
Panasonic is doing a Milan installation for 10 years. They said the idea was that big like, water drop coming from the sky, landing on this very historical building. And we use the nano-EX technology inside, so that's like a super fine micro water, if you like. Yeah, nano-EX is the patented Panasonic unique technology. We use that for like hair dryer, for example, to moisture your hair, or we use for the steamer to moisture your skin. But the main focus product that we are applying nano-EX is the air conditioning unit. In Milan, it's quite chaotic in a way, especially this week, because so many people, so much stuff, and so much information going on. So we wanted to make a space where you can get so isolated, and you can feel like a mindfulness experience. So if you go in there, you almost forget where you are. You start losing the sense of the distance between you and the person next to you. And you have this smell, the scent, visual, and also tactile kind of feeling with the mist flowing around you. Almost like you want to take a really slow, deep breath to kind of refresh yourself. So that was kind of concept behind of this transition. So we wanted to make a transition in people's head when people come to the installation. So before and after, you kind of somehow feel different in your head. Panasonic, it's been great to make tangible solutions, like products, a physical object. But it needs to move towards more of a sometimes intangible emotional sensorial experience. As a creatives or designers, we need to think about emotional experience first and working backwards. But I think it used to be, not necessarily recent couple of years, but decades ago, I think well, the production was more driven by a technology improvement. We have a bigger screen, therefore let's make a bigger TV. But the spec difference or the having a bigger TV or having a bigger fridge is not any longer value of every day. You need to think about what kind of experience that you want to give it to the people in the living room or kitchen. And then you can start thinking about service or application or products. Before I joined, I thought the Panasonic has lots of talents in creation, so the step three. But I was thinking that there's a bit of a lack in the other three steps, insight, strategy, and storytelling. So my team Flux is bringing those new expertise to the team. So in terms of the talents or the type of the expertise that I'm trying to add on to Panasonic design is those three. Really. So good design researcher, good design strategist, also someone who is really good at storytelling. So those three are my key sort of wish list for my team.
Does it overlap with marketing in a way, or is it completely separate? This idea of storytelling and going beyond the functional product?
Yeah, definitely. And that's a really good point that I don't want my team or the Panasonic designers to work in isolation in the business. Of course, we always need to work with marketing team, technology team, business unit team. So it's nice that actually there is the overlap, because when we talk about, for example, storytelling, we approach from creative background, they approach from business background perhaps. So just merging all these different expertise from different background, talking similar things, but if you have a different background, the approach or the outcome that you create is different. So having this diversity in a team, design team, is really important to be able to actually talk to different departments, because they are expert in a way to talk about their product or service. But how we approach in different way and how we could work together, that's really important. But my team, the Flux, is a newly organized team which brings insight, research, design strategy and a storytelling sort of expertise to the team. Panasonic Design is very strong for product making activity or business, but not necessarily having a lot of expertise in research or strategy or communication. So this new team starting from this April is maximizing those existing product designers' capability. Our team is about 15 people, and we don't have a fixed physical space to work in. So we have a London studio, we have a Tokyo studio, we have also a Kyoto studio.
So your team is, the Flux team is spread out in these different geographic locations?
Yeah.
Sort of a virtual kind of team.
Well, we physically move around a lot, but also we have lots of IT support to enable us to work together in isolation.
I'm curious about that. How do you do it when you work in a team where everyone is in a different country, different time zones? I mean, I can only imagine that it might get complicated, but you seem to make it work.
So, for example, we have this monitor constantly connected to different locations. It's almost like a window always on, so you can always see how people are walking in the other location, or we can always kind of hear what they're talking about.
So you mean cameras that are open in a fixed position in the office, so you can see who's in the office and what they're working on almost?
Exactly. So instead of like you sitting on a desk and open a Skype and log into the Skype and select people and dial in, it's like always on, always connected. So it's like you could start treating the display, which is on the wall, as a window to the other locations. Actually, it's much more seamless than it used to be. And in terms of flow of the communication, in terms of like amount of the information that we can exchange, is much bigger and much more rich.
And Taiki, what else do you have planned, and where's your sort of favorite spot for a drink in Milan?
Well, one of my biggest missions this week is to go to Basso to have a stiff Negresco.
Best of luck.
That was Panasonic's Takahiro Ikeda speaking to Monocle's Daphne Karnizis. And our coverage from Salone del Mobile continues all week on Monocle 24 Radio. And don't miss next week's episode of Monocle on Design, where we'll bring you all the best bits from our in-depth coverage, interviews and analysis. Monocle on Design was produced by Daphne Karnizis and edited by Christy Evans. I'm Josh Fennett. Thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.